and proceed when you're ready.
Accept.
I'm Robert Hagan from Pencastle. My client was convicted of giving a false report as to the commission of any crime. So the charge requires a crime within a crime. The crime is making a report. The report must be of a crime. That's the crime within the crime. Now, there should never be guesswork as to what's a crime. Crimes are defined by elements. And a crime is an act for which the law awards punishment. And that's the John Minor in 1894. So the question, and there's no collateral evidence in this case. The only evidence as to what Justina Dunn reported was her own words. This is not a case in which there was an assault or a larceny or a hit and run automobile accident and a false statement was given about a crime that could be proven by collateral facts. In this case, the only proof is Justina Dunn's words, and you have all of her words. And the simple question is, do those words make that the element of a crime? Now, it's undisputed that those words make out a vaginal penetration and an anal penetration. And it's undisputed that those words make out outrageous and disgusting conduct. The question remains, do those words make out a crime? To be a crime, touching, whether it's the ultimate disgrace of a vaginal violation or a anal violation, a touching must be non-consensual. It must be against the will. That's the element of object sexual penetration. That's the element of sexual battery and sexual abuse by the adopted definition. That's the threshold element for a common law assault. Must be non-consensual. So the first question is, what is the effect of Justina Dunn's consent? And we noted that her consent, general consent, to a search which was carried out to the extreme limits of outrage. In constitutional jurisprudence, that consent would not be effective. But this is a criminal case. In a constitutional case, in effect, the requirement for express specific consent creates a legal presumption that the general consent, because it's an issue of fact, in a criminal case, was the touching against the will of the victim. In a constitutional case, that doesn't matter. As a matter of law.
In regard to all this, for the sake of my question, let's assume that what she reported with the officer never happened. If it never happened, and she describes something that involves vaginal and anal penetration, but she says, I gave my consent to it. If none of it happened, the officer didn't search her to begin with, why wouldn't that be a crime?
Your Honor, I think that is the law of the case, that it never happened.
That was my understanding, but I wasn't quite clear on that, so thank you for clarifying that.
The question remains, do her words, did she make a report as to the commission of a crime? That's why I say a crime within a crime.
Is a hypothetical then that you set up to create all of these things that could ruin the reputation of a law enforcement officer. I mean, absolutely destroy it.
At best.
And you've set it up so that because she gave consent, it wouldn't be a problem.
Your Honor, in response, I'd like to reach out and respond to the Attorney General's brief as to whether the Attorney General says it's an issue of whether or not the officer could have made a defense under Judge Dunn's statement. And we're not talking of a matter of defense. We're talking of a matter of failure of proof. And so we're talking the law of slander when we talk about a ruined reputation. We're not talking a crime that with defined elements.
But the law enforcement agency's time is absolutely wasted on something that, given the accusations against the law enforcement officer, they're going to have to double down and really investigate. Not only do they are not out there catching other criminals, they have to investigate their own.
And that's well taken, but I'm not aware that the law in Virginia makes that a crime. I'm not aware of any criminal statute which awards a criminal penalty of a penal servitude, awards a penal servitude for wasting the time of a police officer. It's an important public policy. It's part of civic virtue. It's wrong. But again, we're not talking right and wrong. We're not talking efficiency and inefficiency. We're saying what elements of a crime are presented in Dunn's statement.
Well, and that's another point, too, because reporting of a crime, does it mean that it has to be, that the crime has to be beyond a reasonable doubt each and every element? Or does it mean that it's the person's view that a crime has been committed and the investigation is what determines the, you know, if all the elements are there, et cetera?
I don't think the person's view can change the law. If a person thinks that something is a crime, they cannot make it a crime. Crimes are defined, and there's no guesswork in what's a crime. So I'm willing to accept in this case, and then I think it'd be proper for the court to accept a scintilla standard. Where is there a scintilla to support all of the elements of any crime? And I've been speaking of the threshold element of against the will and non-consensual. We go forward to the intent that's required for common law assault. It has to be an unlawful intent, and that can be culpable negligence. That could be fraud, but fraud requires a lie. Or it has to be willful in the sense of a recognized criminal intent, such as sexual gratification or anger.
And of course, the unique thing about this is we're dealing with your client's made-up story on this. And yes, it's hard from a practical and a common sense standpoint to come up with any reason on earth why she makes up that story unless it's to either detract attention from the suspicions from her or to gain leverage for ultimately the criminal investigation that's going to go against her. So the common sense points towards she alleges some sort of criminal wrongdoing against the officer that's investigating her to try to detract suspicion from her. But you mentioned a few moments ago the term express consent. And what I don't recall reading in the record is anything where, under the theory of her made-up story, the officer says, okay, as a part of this search, I'm about to stick my gloved finger into your anus to look for this $140. And she says, okay, go for it. So how then is that not a criminal offense that she's alleging against him and as a part of her made-up story? I don't remember seeing any express consent to anal penetration. It's just done.
And there is none. The only evidence as to consent is when they're on the stoop outside the room, he requests a search. She says, do what you have to do. And then her voluntary compliance thereafter.
And we're to assume that implicit in that is anal penetration to look for $140?
As a matter of constitutional law, absolutely positively not. But the way I frame the question is, where is the element of non-consent against the will? That's an element of the crime.
What about 18 U.S.C. 242 that the Commonwealth cites on brief?
Your Honor, that's a long stretch by the
I mean, if all it has to be is a criminal offense, how is that a bold stretch?
Well, first, I suggest that the court should consider 5A:18. That's a big question, and it certainly never was presented to the trial court as to whether or not a crime from another jurisdiction.
What jurisdiction would that be?
United States of America.
How is that another jurisdiction unless this didn't occur?
United States of America is a different sovereign for purposes of double jeopardy. It's a different sovereign for its power to define crimes. And once we step out of the jurisdiction of Virginia, if we step to Wisconsin, as the Attorney General suggests, if we step to Texas looking for laws that might have been...
So if I go to Virginia State Police and I tell them my neighbor is a terrorist, and they take a report, and my neighbor is a little old lady who's always lived in Virginia and certainly is not a terrorist, I haven't made a false report just because it's a federal law and not a state law?
It's a false report, Your Honor, but is it a report as to the commission of a crime? If you said your neighbor had an unregistered firearm, if you said your neighbor was in possession of illegal weapons, if you said your neighbor was participating in a terrorist.
And under the federal terrorism statute, she has done X, Y, and Z.
That's my point, Your Honor. If the
federal law.
If the X, Y, and Z are there to make out the elements of a federal crime, then that would be the false report of a crime.
Then why is it a stretch in this instance to cite a federal code section?
Your Honor, again, once you step out of Virginia law, how far do you go? You can go to Malaysia, you can go to Morocco, looking for laws, looking for some criminal statutes which have the elements of what the accused said. I think the surest, and I think it's an open question of law, but I think the surest law is that if they mean a commission of a crime against the Commonwealth. And if we go to a crime against the federal government under 242, and I apologize, not the memory mistake, the civil rights crime. I'll pause here to point out that Virginia has no civil rights crime that I'm aware of, so you're reaching to conduct which Virginia has not made criminal. The next point is that the federal civil rights violation is a specific intent crime. Under the...
Which you've, again, got to take in the context of a made-up story.
Yes. And that's what makes this case difficult for the prosecutor.
And she's supposed to get a pass because we can't prove a specific intent of something that didn't occur to begin with?
Well, again, Your Honor, we're not asking for a pass. But we're asking to apply the law. And the question is, did she make a report as to a crime? Her motive... very likely was bad in telling the story. And by the law of the case, the story was false. But what I'm focusing on is, did she make a report as to the commission of a crime? And I think it's for the government, it ought to be easily answered. The government ought to be able to say, yes, this is the crime and these are the elements.
You have it's gone well into your rebuttal. I should have reminded you before. You may proceed or reserve.
Yes, Your Honor, I will, and thank you. If we get past the consent issue, then we've got for the sexual abuse or for the object penetration, we've got force, threat, intimidation, or ruse, and I've treated of all those in my brief. So, Judge Attlee, coming back to your point, the government has nominated four crimes. The government has said that the Federal Civil Rights Act will suffice, but again, that's a specific intent crime under federal law. And the government has said object sexual penetration, sexual battery, and common law assault. And I think the challenge for this court is to say, did Christina Dunn make a report of any of those crimes? Thank you.
Ms. Tyson. I definitely agree that a very very much the difficulty in this case, is analyzing something that did not in fact happen. And several times in working on this case, I found myself in that difficult spot. I think that the perhaps in order to analyze it, we have to set aside for the moment that it didn't happen and ask the question, did Dunn report conduct that would constitute a crime? And the answer to that question is yes. And it's not, I must disagree with my opposing counsel, that what he is arguing, it does not deal with a failure of proof, but defenses that a defendant could have. And I also want to point out at this point that another difficulty is putting on a lay person almost a requirement of being an expert in the law to know what elements are in a crime. This defendant reported to the state police that someone had penetrated her vaginally and anally when he was doing a search. And he was a police officer for VMI when he did that search. This is not a situation where someone calls the police and says, well, my neighbor is painting his house blue and I think that should be against the law and you ought to investigate it. Because the response of the police in that instance is going to be, that's not a crime and we're not going to investigate it. That's not what happened here. What happened here was an investigation that included more than 40 witnesses, the time of the state police, and when the state police talked to this defendant, she provided this story about what happened. She could have disavowed it at that moment and did not do it.
And continued on with the story after the state police made it clear that they're investigating the commission of a crime on behalf of this.
Yes, indeed. And there are several points I think that are important with regard to that. That the officer told her that the university's administrative investigation was on hold while his criminal investigation occurred. Even her own lawyer during the interview said this is a very serious crime. The officer almost right up front, Agent Sneed from State Police, almost right up front in the interview said, I really hate these kind of cases, but I've arrested troopers that work in the same place that I do. There are, certainly, this was an investigation, and the trooper, Agent Sneed, told her that he would do his investigation and meet with the Commonwealth's attorney to determine what, if any, charges should be brought. There's no question this was a criminal investigation by the state police. I also want to point out the actions that she gave. What did she say to the state police that would constitute the crime? She told them that Officer Coffey had this robe that he viewed under her arms, under her breast, in her vagina, placed his fingers in her vagina, then while he was on his knees, had her reach over and hold her ankles while he penetrated her anus with her fingers. And that was any crime. And the legislature chose carefully its words, and we've already had arguments today about statutory construction. The phrase, any crime. The legislature did not say any crime under this code. It didn't say any crime under the Code of Virginia. It said any crime. Knowingly give a false report as to the commission of any crime to any law enforcement official with intent to mislead. And that is why the federal crime, a violation of federal crime, is enough. And I would point out that Rule 5A18 does not apply in this instance, certainly under right for the wrong reason, under Perry versus Commonwealth, and besides that fact, the Commonwealth as the appellee is not bound by Rule 5A18. And we cited one federal case with regard to the color of law violation, the Langer case, and I'm not going to spend time really talking about that, but the reason that we cited the incidents in our brief from Wisconsin and Texas is not to say that Wisconsin law and Texas law should be at the forefront in this case. The reason those cases are cited is because those are police officers who were convicted of crimes for doing exactly what the defendant in this case alleged Officer Coffey did. So that was the reason for showing that this is not an absolute defense for a police officer. It's not something that cannot be an offense for a police officer because it has been. And if you'll notice, and of course we had to rely on newspaper articles, which is an odd thing to do, but in each instance, these officers pled guilty, they had plea agreements, and charges of sexual misconduct were actually dismissed as part of the plea agreements, and their convictions were for offenses such as abuse of power and that kind of thing. But these offenses that were alleged by the defendant in this case, in fact, were crimes under Virginia law.
Ms. Tyson, can you address the second issue on whether she actually reported it or not as required by the statute?
Yes, and I think that, and I must say the appellant set it up nicely with Massachusetts and Iowa taking some different views on that issue. But the report in this case, and actually I guess the facts sort of fall between the Massachusetts case and the Iowa case. This is a report to law enforcement. And I know that the defendant argued on brief, well, she couldn't help it that Dr. Philbin told the Inspector General at VMI after she spoke to him, she really only made a report to a civilian and then was required to answer questions from the Virginia State Police. But I think the important fact here is she could have not answered those questions of the Virginia State Police falsely. She had numerous opportunities to say, you know, I made this whole thing up, in which case the investigation would have stopped and she would not have made a report. She could have, at that moment, to Agent Sneed and his colleague who was with him, could have said, no, I'm not, this is not true. But instead, she gave an account of what happened to a law enforcement officer. And I realized, because the term report is not defined in the statute, we used a common sense plain meaning, which we got from the American Heritage Dictionary, that to report is to present an account, relate, tell about. She did those things. When she had an opportunity to avoid or disavow what she had said to a civilian. I think it's important that the statute doesn't say that if someone who gives a first false report, her first false report may have been to a civilian, but certainly Agent Sneed and the other agent were there investigating this crime. She knew it was a crime, and she not only answered their questions, but fully answered, described this event in great detail. And in doing so, she was giving a report to them.
So your position is it doesn't have to be that the person initiates the investigation.
Correct.
Anybody who is questioned by law enforcement and gives false information about a crime can be prosecuted under this.
If they are falsely reporting a crime. I think that we need to make some distinction there. She was reporting that a crime had occurred. And so I don't think it's necessary for this court to go so far as to say anyone who gives any sort of false information when questioned would necessarily be guilty. And I think the statute could support that. We just don't need to go that far in this case. Because in this case, in answering these questions, in giving her account to the state police, she was making a report, a false report of the commission of a crime. I do think it's important that the Iowa case, Akitao, I think is maybe how you would pronounce that, was a situation where the defendant was essentially giving a false alibi of his own activity when questioned by the police when he was caught, which is, and in fact, I think it was important in that case, like we noted in our brief, that Iowa had changed its statute, and that was of some importance to the court, that they had ended up amending the statute to make it more liberal. But this is certainly more like the Fortuna case from Massachusetts, where the man was shot, he was in the emergency room, the police asked him questions, he gave him false information about how he was shot, and thus the investigation went on. And I do think that it's important that the purpose of this statute, because when looking at how the legislature uses words, we look at, well, what is the purpose of the statute? And certainly the purpose of the statute is to prohibit people, to suppress giving false reports to the police. And one of the reasons for that is precisely because while the police are investigating this allegation, this story that was told to them, they are not doing the job that they are meant to do. They are not investigating real crimes. I think that getting back to whether this was object sexual penetration, sexual battery, or battery, that this was a report of this crime, of these crimes. The fact that there may be a defense to the crime, the fact that the person making the report was not aware of every single element, and that the government may not be able to prove every element beyond a reasonable doubt, does not alter the fact that she was making a report, a false report, of any crime. And these were the crimes. And certainly, the battery, which is a common law crime, punishes the willful and unlawful touching. The sexual battery and object sexual penetration, there is an element of being against the will, force, threat, or intimidation. We cited the Martin case in our brief, that an act which is undertaken against a victim's will without her consent is taken with force. And the fact that she may have consented to a search would not, and again, this underscores the difficulty because, of course, the evidence is she didn't consent to a search. That the fact that there may have been an additional consent does not cover the waterfront on this. That this these were crimes that were reported. And to conclude that she didn't report the crime because an officer may have a defense of either his official status as an officer or that she somehow had a consent would lead, and I use this phrase only as the case law does, would lead to an absurd result because this is a statute which is meant to punish false reporting of crime.
And does she have to, the word knowingly is in there, does she have to knowingly, does she have to know it's a crime or just knowingly give a false report?
You know, I think the statute, and there is one more element, Judge Beals, and I'm sure that I don't misstate here. I've got the...
With intent to mislead.
The intent to mislead. She must make, let me see exactly how it is worded. It's unlawful for a person to knowingly give a false report as to the commission of any crime. So I would say that the knowingly, she must knowingly make a false report. Now, the Commonwealth doesn't have a case if it's not, if it's that painting the house blue. Even if that person really believes painting the house blue is a crime, it's knowingly making a false report. And then the statute imposes the duty on the Commonwealth that the report be of a crime, which, of course, we will argue in this case did occur.
She doesn't have to know what crime it is or the nature of the code, whether it's a state or federal violation, just that she's a knowingly accusing somebody of some form of wrongdoing that happens to be a criminal offense.
That is correct. And of course, it's the burden of the Commonwealth in prosecuting that to establish that it was the report, a false report of a crime. But no, to impose that duty on the layperson to know the ins and outs of elements of crimes, even defenses to crimes, that would be a burden that would just be too difficult for the legislature to have intended, given the purpose of the statute. And so for all of these reasons, we would encourage this court and we would ask this court to affirm the conviction from Rockbridge County.
Thank you, Ms. Tyson. Mr. Hagan, you have your rebuttal time, and I'll give you a little bit more because we ask you a lot of questions. I'll give you about a minute.
As to the burden of the reporter to know the elements of the crime, certainly not. But it's the responsibility of the prosecutor, defender, trial judge, and court of appeals, and attorney general to know what the elements of the crime are, and to say, are the elements of the crime presented in this report?
Mr. Hagan, have you essentially abandoned your third assignment of error?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Explicitly abandoned my third assignment.
What about the second assignment? Is continue to maintain that she did not, in fact, give a report?
Again, a crime is misconduct for which the law awards a penalty. This crime punishes willful lies, culpable lies. The question, and I think it's an open question for the court, is what culpable lies are going to be penalized with a penal servitude?
And recognizing that you don't concede that she reported a crime, your second assignment of error challenges the fact that she did give a report. Is that still maintained given the interaction with the state police and the fact that Agent, I believe it was Sneed, made it very, very clear that he was investigating a criminal offense, and she continued on with the fraud or the lie that she perpetrated. Is it still maintained that she did not, in fact, give a report regardless of what she reported?
Culpable report under the statute, Your Honor. Yes, I think in common English, that you're not stretching the word report too far to say that she made a report. But when we're looking under a criminal statute, we've got the Massachusetts model, which says that anything you say to a police officer that's false under any circumstances, that's culpable. Then we look at the Idaho or Iowa model, and it's important here that that legislature made the rule explicit after the court made that finding. So the question is, if someone comes forth voluntarily, aggressively, saying, carry forth this this investigation, that's indeed culpable. We're saying that that's not what Justina Dunn did. It's for this court to decide whether when she answers questions, she's going to get in trouble. And that brings up the question knowingly. Did she knowingly cause this prosecution to come about, or did she do her duty? She was asked by a law enforcement officer and advised by her counsel. Answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Hagan. We appreciate you. Do you have another question?
Just to follow up on that, when you said just because she answers the questions, does the fact that she falsely answers those questions in order to trigger an investigation or carry forward an investigation, does that play into the analysis?
Your Honor, if you take the Massachusetts rule, yes, it does. If you take the Idaho rule that she is not willfully pursuing this, then that wouldn't enter into it. Judge, if I may press to speak to the federal issue, the civil rights offense is unknown to Virginia law. It requires a specific intent under United States versus Screws. You can hold a Virginia trial court accountable for knowing Virginia law, but unless it's raised for a Virginia judge that these federal elements are presented, then I think we have a 5A:18 case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hagan. We will greet counsel, and then the court will take a brief recess. So